Hi, women. Before we dive in today, I need to name something important. This episode, along with all episodes that you will hear until our winter break in mid-December, was recorded before my birth, prior to mid-August. Since then, our family has walked through the unimaginable. Our son was stillborn, and we are in deep mourning. As these shows air, you'll hear and see me pregnant, which now feels incredibly painful and weird, given that you are holding the sacred knowledge of what came after. So please forgive the dissonance. These stories still deserve to be shared and heard. We welcome your prayers, your loving thoughts, and your support as we navigate this spiral of such deep grief. I hope you find resonance and nourishment in this conversation today. Thank you. Women, if you are ready to take full responsibility for your birth and you're looking for a clear, comprehensive, step-by-step guide to doing it outside the system, this is it. The Complete Guide to Free Birth is our flagship best-selling course, and it has helped thousands of women and families around the world prepare for sovereign, undisturbed births at home on their own terms. This is the integration of theory and lived wisdom designed to prepare your body, your psyche, your partner, and your space for a truly powerful birth. We cover everything from physiology to wild pregnancy, how to rethink complications, what to do postpartum, and everything in between. You don't need to become a midwife. You don't need to be licensed. You just need to be ready to remember what you already know. And this course will walk you through every step. If you're feeling the call, trust it. Go to freebirthsociety.com/CGTF to learn more and register today. Your birth, your way, in your power. Welcome to Free Birth Society. I'm Emily Saldea, and this is where we break the spell of medicalized birth, remember what's been forgotten, and rise together into our birthright to live, birth, and mother as sovereign women. All right. Welcome, Ashley.
Thank you, Emily. I'm so excited to be chatting with you today.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. It's good to see your smiling face again. I got to meet you officially at MRF this summer. I know you also took RBK, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Awesome.
The RBK program. Yeah. This summer, my brain just went completely blank.
What's it called? MRF.
MRF. Thank you. I'm like, it's not MMI. It's not MLM. MRF. That was so just like hugely integrating all of this transformation. It was really incredible for me.
God, it was so fun.
It really was. Fun was such a great word.
Yeah. Yeah, you definitely looked like you were living it up.
I was.
Did you come with any of your kids?
I did not.
Woohoo. Nope.
They all stayed home with their daddy.
So how many kids do you have?
I have 9. My oldest is 19, and my youngest is 16 months.
Okay. And they all...
Every 2 to 3 years.
No.
Yeah. No multiples, all singletons. Yeah.
They all came out of your body.
All came out of my body.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Awesome. So we've got a big story ahead of us. So I'm just going to pass it to you. Like, what happened, you know, 19, 20 years ago? Who are you? What is it like to have that first child, and how does that shape you into being a three-time free birth and mom?
So I was 22 when my first was born, and my mom had had a baby, I say later in life. She was in her mid-30s. I was born when she was a teenager. My sister was born when she was 20, and then a later, you know, 35, and she had her unmedicated, like a hospital birth, all of that. And it clicked something in my brain. And when I went into that first pregnancy, I knew that I did not want to have an epidural. I didn't want that kind of birth. This was something that I wanted for myself. I wanted an unmedicated natural birth. I thought I would love to do a home birth, but like a lot of first time moms, I thought maybe I should just see how this goes the first time around before I do it at home. And I had a beautiful, beautiful, unmedicated, very powerful birth. Of course, my perspective on it has shifted a lot over the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily feel the same way about it now that I did then. But at the time, it just filled me with this great sense of confidence that, yeah, I can absolutely give birth to my baby without needing to numb out my body or my mind. And it was a really powerful, transformative thing for me. I went on to have another unmedicated hospital birth. And then I had my first home birth with midwives in attendance. And that was another really big shift for me, like proving powerfully, like, oh, yeah, I can totally safely do this at home. I can feel good about it. My husband was totally on board. I know that in that birth, he would tell you that the midwives gave him confidence that things would be safe. And of course, his perspective has shifted a lot too, especially since our last three were free births. But then I got kind of a monkey wrench in my birth story, in my arc. And my fourth baby was born by cesarean. I had a partial placenta previa, enough so that I had two very large bleeds. And with the second one, she was born by cesarean that night. I was 37 weeks.
What do you think about that now, knowing so much more, partial versus and all that?
I often wonder. So I know from speaking to the obstetrician afterwards that it wasn't just low lying, like it was partial covering. But I often wonder if her head had come down more, would it have applied enough pressure to stem any bleeding from that? Had that particular lobe of the placenta bled out a little bit more, would the rest have been sufficient to keep her safe, to keep her alive? And of course, I'll never know. I'll never know the answer to that. But I can't even say with integrity, like, I know for sure now that I would choose a different path. But I would absolutely question it more than I did at the time. They would absolutely be a bigger consideration.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, it was definitely, the pregnancy was actually the traumatic part. Like, the cesarean birth for me was, it was all just very matter of fact. Like, I believe at the time, this is what needs to be done. This is how she gets here. It was pretty by the book. My recovery was by the book. But the bleeding and all of that during the pregnancy and the unknown was what was actually really scary.
And worrying about the baby.
Exactly. You know, just sitting there covered in blood, like, frankly, and my hands on my belly, just like, please move, please move, please move. You know, that's a scary place to be. And she's a healthy, thriving, beautiful 13-year-old girl now. And so I can look back at it with a different view and perspective. But yeah, that was a big, like, fork in the road, right? And you would think that maybe, just maybe, I would have shifted into a different choice for my next couple of babies. But I think I had a lot of fear. It was unaddressed. I did go on to have two hospital unmedicated VBACs. But the first one was actually the first time that I would say that I had had a traumatic birth experience, because the midwife who attended that birth was truly abusive to me and to my baby.
Why did you go back into the hospital for the VBACs, any particular?
It was the fear. It was the fear of, what if this happens again? And that was just something that I was not in a place to address at the time. I wasn't ready to face that and to step into that full ownership of the whole process. That was something that took me time to come to.
So your myth was the one that started, that really felt like clear abuse from the midwives?
Yes. Yeah. His head was born and she reached into my body and pulled him out by his shoulders. That was the first time I'd ever torn during birth. I mean, I had a 9-pound baby born with his fist by his head and didn't have any tearing, but she forcibly removed him from my body and was very, very unkind to me. And to him, that is not a gentle way to bring a child into the world. And then, of course, I went back for the next baby. And I still look back at myself and say, what were you thinking? Why did you put yourself back?
What were you thinking?
I think, well, part of it was that my husband still had a lot of fear around being at home without a midwife. And we were in North Carolina, and as you know, you can't have a midwife legally attend birth. And financially, we felt like we couldn't afford an under-the-table midwife, and he wasn't on board yet with the idea of free birth, though it was definitely something that I had floated to him multiple times. And I didn't feel like I was in a place that I wanted to push that. My next baby's, you know, baby number six, her birth was actually really quite lovely. The midwife who attended was kind and, you know, she did her job according to the hospital policies, but she was kind to me and good to me and to my baby. And I still walked away from that experience going, I don't want to do this again. Never again. I don't want to get in the car and go to the hospital to give birth to my baby. I just want to have my baby. And so when we got pregnant with our seventh, I was praying about what to do, because I was already well into my first trimester. I hadn't gone to see any medical professionals. I didn't want to. And my husband was expressing his concerns to me, you know, safety concerns, whatever that means. And I had been praying about it, and I was out running my mom errands all on my own. And I said, you know, God, I really need some sort of like confidence giving sign. And the scripture came to me just like that, that was, you've not been given a spirit of fear, but of power, love, and sound mind. And I said, okay, I've not been given a spirit of fear. I can move past that fear. I have a sound mind. Like, I'm perfectly capable and wise of knowing what's best for me and my baby. And I went to my husband and I said, Peter, I'm not asking you to trust that everything's going to be okay, whatever that means. I'm asking you to trust me, to trust that I love this baby and care about this baby and myself and our well-being more than any doctor or midwife in this world is ever going to care. And I'm asking you to just trust me. And he said, of course I trust you. And so he entered into that mindset of, okay, we're having this baby at home, just you and I and the kids downstairs. And it was the most peaceful, joyful, exciting pregnancy since my first. You know, when everything is so exciting and new, it was like the first baby all over again, because it was all me now. It was all my own wisdom, my own inner knowing, like checking in with myself, checking in with my baby, and just quietly preparing to give birth.
How did you even hear about this option? How did that even come into your awareness?
I actually had a friend, an online friend, way back in the day. I was in some of those natural parenting forums and boards online, and she lived in France, and she had had her twin boys at home with nobody else, and she had just said, yeah, I'm just going to have an unassisted birth, and she did, and it was fantastic, and I was like, that's what I want. And there was something that I had learned about myself, and that was that when I had someone who I perceived as an authority over me in my birth space, even the most lovely home birth midwives like I had with my third baby, I found myself going into like a fawn response, like just kind of shrinking into myself and not fully owning what was going on around me and not being able to speak for myself or stand up for myself. And I wanted to birth my baby from a place of authority in myself, and not trusting in what somebody else was saying was good or bad or okay or not okay.
Mm-hmm.
So she was born at home in the water. I had a big old garden tub. It was amazing. It was the best. And it was so joyful. It was a fast labor, I think maybe like 3 hours until she was born. And she came out and I was just laughing. And I was like, we did it. Like, look at us. We did it. Like, you're here. You're healthy and well and alive and safe, and I'm good. Of course, we did it.
And how does that change you and shift your marriage and your family?
I developed so much more trust in my own intuition and in my own inner knowing, and the confidence that I then felt, even just as a woman existing in this world, was just so amplified. I think my husband saw me in a different way. You know, he'd always appreciated the power of what it was for me to like be bringing our children into the world. But yeah, it's a different thing standing. And I'm a hands-off person. Don't talk to me. Don't touch me. Just let me go inward and bring my baby into this world. And so he was just always close, just nearby. And him, he just stood in the bathroom and took a few pictures and watched me bring our baby into the world. And I think that that was a pretty powerful moment for him too, just to like witness in a way without any other interference or anyone telling him, okay, Dad, here's what you get to do now. He just got to stand there and be like the protector and the holder of our space.
I mean, it's a pretty big thermostat increase, you know, from verse 4. It's a pretty big, like I was thinking about how you said with your first birth, you know, you didn't like know any better. You might think about it a bit differently now, but at that time, it really felt like you were connected to your power and you felt really good about your birth. And I think that's a really interesting aspect of what we're, maybe this is the wrong phrase, but like what we're up against in, you know, in birth work. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's just, it that just reveals a low thermostat setting of how good it can be, which of course, like all of us have that until we don't, because of the culture we're born into and the stories of our mothers and, you know, everything we've ever seen on TV and all of that. And so that's an interesting thing that comes up a lot, I'm sure, in your work as well, of, you know, there's a real, what is the right word? I mean, one way it plays out is real defensiveness of women's, you know, births, but also just like good enoughness.
Wow. That's actually, I think that's a really great way to describe it. Like, it was good enough.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, how good can it be? It's, this is as good as it is. And it's just an acceptance of the status quo because, well, at least they didn't do this to me and at least they didn't do that to me. And so I didn't come away with any physical or mental scars. Right. So
it's in comparison to how much worse, you know, I mean, we do this with all sorts of stuff. We do this with sex. We do this with partners. You know, I hear women complain all the time about their partners and then be like, well, you know, at least he makes money or at least he doesn't abuse me. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah, like, okay. That's such a low bar. I say all the time, why would you choose to be someone who wasn't like fully be with them if they're not fully in it with you? I had people say, oh, you leave your 9 children for a week to go to MRF. Of course I did. Of course I did. I married a very capable, competent, good man who is my why would I have 9 children with somebody who I didn't trust to be with them for a week while I'm not? And yeah, it is. It's not just a good enough. It's like good, like really good.
It is a good point. Yeah. The especially when you have a lot of kids, the assumptions around being with them all the time and the, what is the right word? Yeah. I've seen that with other moms with lots of children. There's a, like a real, like no one blinks an eye if you leave like your 2 kids for the weekend.
I've actually had the experience when people are like, oh, is Peter staying with the kids this weekend? I mean, yeah.
Is he okay?
Is he all right? Does he need anything?
Yeah.
Nobody asks me that. Nobody.
Right.
I actually think that it's really just this assumption that men are incapable. And I mean, of course, some of them are, and sometimes are. Just contribute to this ideology by not holding them to a higher standard. And most of the time, people are going to rise to the standard which you set for them.
For sure.
Set a high standard.
I mean, I think that really people don't know how. Like, I mean, it's not an excuse. You learn how. Okay, so then eighth baby. Now it's like we're a free birthing family, duh, right?
Yeah, exactly. Her birth was great. Her pregnancy, I had a lot of anxiety during her pregnancy. I was just dealing with a different phase of, you know, self-healing and growth and all of that. But her birth was fantastic. It was another quick one. I had spent the morning out in my garden weeding and watering and fertilizing, and I sat down on my bench, and you know the shift in your body. It's not a contraction. It's not a sensation like that. There's just an internal shift. And I went, oh, okay, well, today is the day. Went inside, laid down, took a little nap, and she was born in the early afternoon. I always laugh when I think about her birth because I had such a fight with myself. We had moved to a different house, and we had this tiny little 1980s bathtub that was just not large enough for a fully pregnant woman, at least not in a way that I wanted it to be. But I was in the tub, and I could feel her moving down, and the pushing sensations were getting stronger. And I was like, this is going to be so uncomfortable if I try to give birth to this baby in this bathtub. But I fought with myself for a solid 3 contractions before I gave up and said, oh, fine, Peter, would you please throw some towels down on the floor? And crawled out, and she was born in 2 contractions on the floor. I just really wanted another water birth. Couldn't have it, but that was okay.
Why did you want a water birth?
I just really enjoyed it with the 2 that I had had before. My first home birth was a water birth. And my 7th baby was born in my big garden tub. And I find that it really does ease some of the ring of fire sensations, pressure and burning at grounding and things like that. I find it to be a relaxing experience, like just more comfort for myself.
Yeah, I've only had 2 kids, but I'm on the precipice of having my 3rd, and I've been thinking about water because with my first 2, I really felt quite caged in the water.
Well,
and I didn't ever stay in the water long enough to get to the point where the head was coming out to feel what you're talking about. So yeah, I was thinking about it this time, like, oh, I wonder if I can remember to try it. But I make up that I remember just feeling not claustrophobic, that's too dramatic, but just like I couldn't like move the way I wanted to. But every birth's different, so I'm
yeah,
gonna
that's totally valid crap. Too yeah and sometimes some people just prefer feeling like fully grounded, right? Like,
I know, but it hurts.
Well, yeah, you're not wrong. There's definitely that since I was actually watching back the video of her birth and laughing at myself because I was literally just saying, owie, 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 like as she was
crying. Yeah.
Like it was just like, that's the best word. Like it's a burning sensation and it's not comfortable. I wouldn't describe my births and labors as like overly painful. Like for me, that the experience has never been like, oh my God, this hurts, I'm dying, get me away from this pain. It's just more like, oh my God, this is really, really intense and uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable. That's been my experience. Oh, well, until my last birth. So I read Yolanda's book. I read Portal during my pregnancy with my last baby. And while I will say, I don't think I was able to get to the place of like a truly blissful birth, my labor with her was so, so easy right up until the last hour. I laid in bed and basically slept for 7-8 hours worth of sensations, just like off and on. I was listening to one of Yolanda's meditations just laid next to my head, and I was dozing in and out, and just until I fully woke up because I had a sensation that I recognized as her shifting down. And I was like, my waters are about to release. I'm going to go sit on the toilet. And I did. And then the next contraction, my waters released. But her birth was actually really interesting because I had been thinking about the idea of what it would be like if she were born in a less than optimal position, whatever optimal means. And I started having pushing sensations when after my water's released. And after about 15 minutes, I was like, this feels like it's taking a really long time. It does, you know, after so many babies, for me, my pushing has only been 15 minutes tops by the time I get to that stage. I was like, why is this taking so long? And so I got down on my hands and knees on the floor, and I was hands and knees, and I was putting my bum up in the air and sitting back on my heels and sitting up straight and just trying to move my body in a way that I felt like would get her down. And I pushed with her for a solid hour, which all things considered isn't necessarily a long time. It just felt like a long time for me because of my prior births. And she was actually born face up, so posterior, whatever. But she had molding right like at her hairline by her forehead. And I thought that that was really, really interesting that it was not quite a face first presentation, but like a forehead-ish presentation. And I knew from my experience in the past with the studying and learning about birth that I've done that had I been in a situation where I had allowed someone to put their hand in my vagina to see what position my baby was in, they very likely would have said, oh, this is a forehead presentation. She can't be born safely this way. And they probably would have wanted to try to turn her or to keep me open again. And so that was a really interesting experience for me to think about how, because I chose to trust what my body and my baby were capable of doing, they did something that somebody else probably would have told me wasn't safe or a good idea or even possible. And it was.
Well, that wasn't the first time. I mean, even just having, you know, a bunch of babies on your own at home, they would have found something in there.
Oh, yeah, for sure. The risk of hemorrhage. You've had so many babies. Of course you're going to hemorrhage. I've never once had a postpartum hemorrhage. I did have a really interesting experience with my first rebirth. And I feel like this is just so much proof of how oftentimes our thoughts and our beliefs can create our reality. One thing that I was really stuck on was, what happens if the placenta doesn't come? What do I do if the placenta isn't releasing properly? Is that it's taking a long time to come out? And for some reason, I was really stuck on this. And maybe I was stuck on it because it was going to happen, or maybe it happened because I was stuck on this train of thought. But it took 3 hours for her placenta to come after she was born. And I bled maybe a little bit more than anyone else would be comfortable with. But knowing that true hemorrhage is a physiological state and not an amount of bleeding, I felt fine. And so I just knew that I needed to get to a place where I was actually ready to release the placenta. And then it came whole and perfect, and all was well with the world.
Yeah. So talk to me about your kids' involvement in the whole scene, if anything. How do you let them, what's the deal?
I prefer to be alone in my space. I know that I went back and forth quite a bit with my ninth baby. My oldest teenage daughter maybe wanted to be there, but it was middle of the night, early hours of the morning, and it just didn't really cross my mind to go or have Peter go and get her. But I'm very much, I just want to go internal. In fact, I'm happy to have my husband in the space, supporting me. Just don't talk to me, don't touch me. And I would probably be totally fine if you just put me in a dark room by myself and just let me give birth. Mm-hmm. I've never really cared for having my younger kids around. It's a distraction for me in a way that doesn't feel like a good distraction. It wouldn't be a distraction from the discomfort or the work of labor and birth. It would have been a distraction from my ability to go inward
in
a way that I prefer to in order to bring my babies into the world. So they're around, they're at home. When my ninth baby was born, the youngest at the time, our baby number 8, she did wander into the bathroom. And so Peter was holding her. And I was pretty loud, which she still talks about. Mommy, do you remember when Daisy was coming out of your butt? And which, you know, 4-year-old language. But you were yelling a lot. Why were you yelling so much? Well, it was a lot of work. It was really a lot of work pushing that baby out. So she was around. I feel like maybe my toddler at the time when Ruby was born might have wandered into the bathroom as well, but I don't have like vivid memory of it because I was not here. I was not on this earthly plane while I was, you know, giving birth.
It makes me wonder how many women would really choose to have their children around once they let go of, you know, like the heroic agenda to like teach their kids and show kids like there's such a, which, you know, I mean, I understand the motivation, especially if you have birth trauma, to rewrite the story and make up that it can be done with your kid and it needs to, you know, I think a lot of moms think that the kid needs to see the baby come out of the vagina versus what I would say is like, they can't miss it. Like if they live in your family, if they see you pregnant, if they know you birth at home, if they see you postpartum, like it's the same thing. They don't need, I don't think they need some specific proof or memory that the baby came out of your vagina, you know, if it happens that way, whatever, but it just seems like a lot of women are motivated out of guilt of how the older kids' births went.
Well,
that they really believe, and maybe they're right. Like, what do I know? That's not my experience. And I've only had 2 kids, so I'm very, very inexperienced, you know, compared to someone with 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 kids. I know with the one birth I had where I already had a kid, I needed her away from me.
Mm-hmm.
I was too maxed. I couldn't like take responsibility for caring about anyone else's energy.
So it's nearly impossible to turn the switch.
Right.
You can't really just turn it off and say, oh, well, you can be in this space, but I'm not somehow going to be thinking about you or worrying about whether or not
But I also know it is true. Like, I know and believe plenty of mothers that I've either personally seen or they've told me that they've loved having their children around, which I can't yet relate to. But of course, there's like many ways to slice a,
yeah,
you know,
their own experience and their own perspectives and all of that. I found it funny that you mentioned, though, like as a learning experience, right?
Yeah.
That the kids witnessed this. I actually had that. And honestly, I think I could call it like, it's almost like a savior complex.
Mm-hmm.
With some of my prior births, in wanting to prove you can have a baby without medication in your spine.
Mm-hmm.
I had so many people in the room when my first few babies were born. So many people. Moms, mother-in-laws, sisters, friends, like 6 superfluous people, because I felt like I needed to prove to them that this was possible, that this could be done. And also like, well, if I let my mom in the room, then maybe my mother-in-law's feelings would be hurt if I don't let her in the room. It was definitely a huge shift when I went from, well, it's okay if these people are here because this is actually really good for them to see like how it can be, to I'll just tell them how it can be later. They don't need to actually witness my baby being born to know that birth can be something really powerful and transformative. I think I definitely have a little bit of let me prove you wrong, because I love my mother-in-law dearly, but when I had mentioned that I wanted to have my first baby without an epidural, I didn't want any medication, I wanted a natural birth. She had made a joking comment about me wanting to experience the full effect of the curse. So like the curse on Eve that you will experience pain in childbirth, which was so funny to me because she actually had all four of her children without epidurals. So it was a very, I think that my 22-year-old self really just needed to prove to her that I was tough and I could do this.
A lot of women do that, whether they're conscious of it or not. A lot. If I had a dollar for how many women I have talked out of allowing a lot of people at their births, I'd have a lot of dollars, you know. But yeah, I think it is very motivating. I also think as a first-time mom, you have no effing clue for the most part. Yeah, what you're about to get into.
I had with my first, if you want to call it a textbook birth, like these are the stages of labor, right? These are the emotional signposts. I had read one of the Bradley Method books or something. Like it was by the book, 8 hours, like everything happening, like according to what a textbook might say is an ideal birth. And my water's released while I was standing in the shower in the hospital. And I made a young nurse cry because she had never seen a woman give birth without medication before. And it was emotionally overwhelming to her. It was a very interesting experience as a first-time mom to have all of that happening. And then to have my next birth be one where they said, you better get in here quickly. Your last birth was really fast. You're going to want to come in right away. All of these things. And then to have it take, you know, 21 hours and like 5 hours of transition and 45 minutes of pushing for this big boy that I had. It was just proof that birth is never what you think or expect it's going to be. Because it's just going to be what it is each time.
Yeah, that's where I'd like to go next. As a mother of 9 children with such a diverse, you know, like scope of experience. And with me on the precipice of my third, I would like some advice.
Tell you that the third baby is the wild card.
But every birth is a wild card. That's just stupid.
Every single birth is a wild card.
But I want to know, like, what have you, looking back, like, what have you learned when it's like game time or like close to game time? Of like what helps you and what has, helped you move the needle. Because I had a very, very hard time last time. I didn't really, once I finally surrendered, it was out of like just total decimation and like, just kill me. I don't even care. Just take me, God. Just like, oh my God, I'm so inside out, you know, which is great. Like, that's a good place to hit and lots of lessons there. But yeah, I specifically am wondering about any tips or support pieces around just like calling in that yes, you know, and letting it all be there. And like intellectually, I can go there, but I haven't gone there in birth yet.
I love that you said that intellectually you can go there.
Of course.
I'm very much an intellectualizer. I will intellectualize everything, which means it's then really hard for me to embody it because I tend to stay up here a lot.
Even in birth?
Leading up to, yeah, it there's a lot of, for me, it stays a lot up here. But it's that moment of knowing, oh, this is it. Because for me, there's always been the, maybe this is it. Could this be labor? And I know everyone hates to hear it. I'm sure you've experienced this. When you tell women, when it's time, you're going to know.
Mm-hmm.
For me, that has been my experience.
Yeah.
Even with the non-baby producing labor that can happen. I love that phrase instead of prodromal labor. So thank you for that, Emily. I think you were the first person I heard call it non-baby producing sensations, right? That I had for weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Some of mine. There's always a shift.
Mm-hmm.
There's a moment of, oh, this is it. And for me, that moment always comes with a little bit of white knuckle, almost like a panic. Like,
mm-hmm.
Oh my God, here we go again. I've done this before. I know it's going to be really intense. I know it's probably maybe going to hurt a little bit, and I don't know how long. And it's this moment of everything goes real big up here. And then for me, it's that it's that prayer or meditation or whatever brings you back in to self, right? And for me, that's often prayer, like talking to God, like, okay, I'm surrendering to this. I know that I was created for this, and my baby has chosen me. You have chosen my baby for me, and like, we're in this together. And it's the surrender, like you talked about, the surrendering to the process. But yeah, it's whatever brings you into your body and out of your head. For me, that's the biggest thing. I loved listening, like I said, with my last one, to Yolanda's, one of her birth meditations, and I wish I could remember which one it was off the top of my head. But it was so good for me because it helped me to stay out of my head. It gave me something to let my mind do, to listen, so that I could, my mind was busy listening, so that myself could be in my body. So yeah, just whatever brings you back into your body.
I don't know. Not that you're suggesting this, but like, I don't know if I could listen to Yolanda in my birth.
That is very valid. You and Yolanda have a very different relationship. I mean, Yolanda
doesn't. I'm crying.
Adam,
so. Yeah, exactly.
But it's a totally different thing, but perhaps there's
I'm sure there's other ones. I mean, her voice is so beautiful though, and she loves me so much, so maybe it's the perfect move, or it would just like, it would so not
maybe work. Just, like, maybe listen to it, because I listened to it, you know, a couple times a week leading up to, because it's like a really beautiful like birth preparation and all of that, and then water, like I really like water, but yeah, you haven't had a great experience with feeling good in water, so that might be different.
Yeah, well, I guess I liked it for a while last time, and then I could feel my waters were about to open, and I just like had to get up. And when I got up, once that my waters opened, then I had to go puke, and I just like, then it was on, and I never wound up, it never even occurred to me to go back into the water. So anyway, yeah, that you know, it's fun.
Well, it sounds like you've had a really, really intense labor. Yeah,
the last one was. Yeah. But it's like, wasn't it intense because of my resistance? Isn't that the, like, you know, isn't that the whole point? Right.
It's chicken or egg here. What's happening? Was there resistance because it was intense, or was it intense because there was resistance?
Right. I don't know.
I think both can be true.
Yeah, I think both can be true. And so now you are, I mean, I know you took RBK. I don't know really anything beyond that. Like, you're interested in birth work. Do you work with women? How has this shaped you?
I do not yet work with women at this point in that way. So I've kind of had like a social media. I always downplay it a little bit, and that's not really fair. Like I had built up a following of about like 40,000 women on YouTube and about like 12,000 on Instagram. And I stepped away from that last year because I needed to take a sabbatical. Like I felt very clearly that I needed time, and I had a huge, just so much for myself personally in the last year of growth and spiritual shifts and changes that I've actually left those things behind and I'm starting over.
Wait, why? Why would you leave a whole following behind?
Because it felt like those people who were following me there knew a completely different version of me, even just in the year. And for me, it felt like I wanted a clean slate of building up a following that was more aligned with where I'm at now.
Versus just like catching them up?
Yeah, maybe. I listen, I go back and forth with this all the time, Emily.
Yeah, that seems absolutely crazy to me, but I don't know.
Well, it does seem crazy. And you're right. And like, even just having this conversation with you, it's like, well, yeah, maybe.
Like, why don't you just be like, why, hey guys, I changed.
I think, and that's totally fair. That's a really valid point, Emily. And now I'm going to have to sit with that. We do some breath work on why I feel like.
I don't know anything about you of like how different it was and why you would believe it would be incompatible. So maybe there's something there that is accurate, but just like baseline, not knowing anything, assuming that your evolution is like within the realms of normal. I don't know why you draw.
So I mean,
40,000 followers.
You're totally right. You're totally right. I'm going to spend some time with that today. I'm only going to see what comes.
Well, because also, people are welcome to leave if it's no longer compatible with their interest. But I think a lot of women are extremely interested in the evolution of someone they're following. You know, like, because that's real and inspiring.
Well, and that's true. That's a huge part of my story is who I was and who I am now, and that it is safe and it is good actually to grow. And that anyone who says that my beliefs and who I am are the exact same now as they were 10 years ago is somebody who's
right. So what? Not authentic. What are you like hiding from? Like, what is the thing you don't want your followers?
What am I hiding from? I'm hiding from the fact that I am a follower of Christ. I am a woman of faith,
uh-huh.
But my faith the best way to put this is like, I decided to take God out of the box, right? And to explore aspects of my faith outside of what is normative and okay in Western evangelical Christianity.
Great.
And that means now I do things like, wear crystals and and connect with God's creation through this way, connecting with spirit in different ways that maybe aren't as okay. And so I'm pre-perceiving judgment and condemnation from a community that knew me one way.
No.
Yeah, I know. And now you're saying it. I'm like, yeah.
You can't run from, first of all, you can't run from that shit. That shit is gonna find you.
It is. You're totally right.
You know, totally right. Even if this whole start over thing works and you build up a new 40K or a new 12K, you're therefore, just because it's numbers, going to deal with the same stuff. So the what's it called? The handle may change, but you can't escape the occurrence of, no, you definitely can't. But then on the flip side, well, so you can't run away from judgment. Right. Like, of course not. But you can know who you are and own your shit and not take it on and not, you know, not give power to strangers and projections. I just had a woman on the show. I don't know where she'll fall in the order of your episode, so this might not make sense for listeners. But I had this woman on the show who was very she had a really successful company. And it got basically usurped, and she went through the cancel culture, lib, woke, you know, thing. And so anyway, her point was like, if everyone tells you your hair is blue and you know your hair is not blue, it's annoying that they think your hair is blue, but it's not like gonna shake you. It's only gonna shake you.
Yeah.
It's only gonna shake you if you're like, wait, is my hair blue? Oh shit, is this blue? You know? And so her point was, you know, like, you have to know who you are and stand in what you're doing with great courage and humility, or else they'll eat you alive.
Yes, that is totally true. I guess then to like go back and answer your question fully, is that my work with women at this point has mostly leaned towards what I would consider like mentor or guide, especially for moms who experience a lot of anger and rage because of their own unhealed shit that mm-hmm. they need to work on in themselves, and that they're spewing it out on their kids. Because that was me. I was a very angry, rageful, not kind mother for the first 3 to 4 years of my children's lives. And so I take that as a way to share with women, these are tools, these are things you can actually do to shift that, and then to repair the relationship with you, with your kids. Because my oldest, I thank God every day for the relationship that I have with him now, because that child used to be afraid of me. He used to legitimately be scared of me, and it broke my heart. It devastated me. And that, when I realized that he was afraid of me, that's when I said, this has to change. I have to change, because this isn't about him being an obnoxious kid. Like, too many moms think, oh, I can't be the mom I want to be because my kid won't be the kid I want them to be.
Grow up.
That's bullshit. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You're in your victimhood right now. Like, I am at the effect of my children instead of I am a grown ass woman who is responsible for her own thoughts, beliefs, feelings, and actions that come out of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where I lean now. I definitely talk about birth related things, or have in the past, sharing my own experiences, but I will fully confess that I am still too immature, I suppose. I still get too butthurt when people don't listen to me because I think I'm right all the time and do things that I tell them, if you do this, this is what's going to happen. And then I'm exactly right and that happens. And then I'm like, I'm not going to be the one who says I told you so, but I'm definitely taking it. And so I fully acknowledge that I'm not yet in a place where I am capable of just like fully being with women and saying, you own your choices. Here's my experience. And this is yours to have, like, for
take practice.
I think I'll get there. I've always said that I figured that I would be like a middle-aged midwife. And also I recognize that I'm 42. So that's probably middle-aged, but I still have young babies. And for me, that doesn't feel in integrity with how I want to be with my kids, taking on work that then takes me away from them for potentially really long periods of time. And I know women do it all the time. It just doesn't feel right for me right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and there's lots of ways to support women in birth, obviously, that aren't going to their births. Okay. So I guess the last thing I feel inspired to say or compelled to say is take it or leave it. But for whatever this is worth, I know that whenever you're ready to stop hiding and whenever there's no like it's only for you to decide. But when you are ready to own, like fully own where you're at, and the messiness of that, right? Like, you're never going to be like so cleaned up that you'll be like completely bulletproof from, you know. So whenever you're ready, I think that there will be, I strongly believe that there will be more women inspired by your creativity in exploring your spirituality and in exploring your relationship to God outside the box as you framed it. I think from what I see, women are so many women are so curious about what that could look like. And there aren't a lot of women like showing the way of what that could look like, you know? And so I think there is a real beauty and interest and inspiring gift in your own courage of going outside the box and really making your relationship to God your own, so that it is the most authentic and real, which obviously only serves you and your family.
Right.
And then if you get to a place of interest in sharing that, yeah, of course it takes courage, but I think way more women would be inspired by that than judgy.
Well, thank you for saying that, Emily. I'm gonna sit with that. I think there's a lot of truth in what you're saying. It's definitely given me some food for thought and a different perspective, because I was coming at it from a perspective of almost like it was cheating if I tried to ride my own coattails. I don't know. That's so absurd when I say that.
What?
I know. It's so silly. Yeah. No, that's some really great.
I actually think it's kind of an obvious character arc that you are, when you're ready, are going to have to own. I actually think there's probably something here because of like the dramatic end and the fears around it. I think it'll be a really important integration piece of who you are becoming to own to your followers this evolution, because you say like, I know I'm allowed to grow. It's like, well, prove it.
Yeah.
You know,
all in good time. Yeah. No, that's some good stuff.
Well, thank you. I can't believe we did 9 birth stories in under an hour.
I need you to know that I actually spent a solid like 2 days going over like, okay, what is the most efficient and quick way that I can express each of these stories? Because I could literally talk to you for 3 hours or more.
Of course.
Like, there's so much. I'm really grateful for the opportunity to share them. I love talking about them, even the hard parts, because I think that it's so valuable to hear women's stories and to know. It just shows us what's possible.
Yeah, that's important. Yeah. Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Emily.
All right, women, I hope you enjoyed the show today. You can support this podcast by donating to it through the link in the show notes below, and of course, leaving an awesome review on whatever platform you listen on. The more reviews, the more visibility the show gets. So let's spread the good word of free birth. Don't forget, you can watch all of my podcast interviews on YouTube and see the women as they tell their birth and power stories. And you will also find our viral free birth collection of epic raw birth videos on our YouTube channel, so make sure you're subscribed. We always have a lot going on at Free Birth Society, and you can find out about all of it at freebirthsociety.com. And I am at Free Birth Society on Instagram. Please opt into my newsletter below so that you don't miss a thing. We offer courses on free birth, sovereign birth work, as well as one-on-one coaching, women's retreats, so much. Our exclusive private vetted membership, The Lighthouse, is definitely something to check out if you are looking for a community of wise sisters to get guidance from and to meet in real life. Together we rise, sisters. We must speak our stories fully, claim our lives, and support one another. This is the living revolution, and I am so grateful to be in it with all of you. Till next time.